The astronauts have a message for the people of Earth. Will our political leaders listen? You're listening to SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. As Artemis II journeys back to Earth, some of the most enduring moments from the mission have been the words of humans as they slingshot around the moon. Astronaut Victor Glover shared an unscripted Easter message over the weekend with CBS News. For today's Dakota Political Junkies analysis, we ask what politicians and candidates might learn from four people gazing through the darkness of space at an oasis for flourishing. Michael Card is Professor Emeritus of Political Science for the University of South Dakota. John Hunter is former publisher of the Madison Daily Leader and a member of the South Dakota Newspaper Hall of Fame. We begin here with John Hunter.
Looking at the views that they're looking at, you can't help but think of the bigger picture when you see Earth as it is and looking back at it. Yes, we've all seen photographs, but I think the live version is just something that most of us will never experience. It's neat to get that perspective, and it's good for us back here to hear that because we can get so wrapped up in our day-to-day lives and in politics today where you have to wake up in the morning and decide who you're going to be angry with. Then you look back and you say, look, it's just one planet, right? I mean, it's just us. Let's get along and let's bring unity and peace and so forth. So I think it's a catalyst that I think the mission is a catalyst for greater good. Yes, there's scientific discoveries that are made too, but I think also some perspective. And perspective is extremely valuable today when it seems as though the people who yell on the media don't have perspective, whether they're just too narrow focused that they can't or for whatever reason. And so I do love that opportunity that Glover took, and I'm inspired by it all.
Yeah. Mike Card, have you been following the Artemis mission and some of the things that all the astronauts have been saying about looking back at us here on Earth?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thought for us, especially when it comes unscripted, as that apparently did, complete with the ums and the ahs, and it was very clear he wasn't reading off a script, and it is a message of hope, and what can we ask for than a message of hope?
These observances are important, and as we are so far from Earth and looking back at, you know, the beauty of creation, I think for me, one of the really important personal perspectives that I have up here is I can really see Earth as one thing. And, you know, when I read the Bible and I look at all of the amazing things that were done for us who were created, it's you have this amazing place, this spaceship. You guys are talking to us because we're in a spaceship really far from Earth, but you're on a spaceship called Earth that was created to give us a place to live in the universe and the cosmos. I think maybe the distance we are from you makes you think what we're doing is special, but we're the same distance from you, and I'm trying to tell you, just trust me, you are special. In all of this emptiness, this is a whole bunch of nothing, this thing we call the universe. You have this oasis, this beautiful place that we get to exist together. I think as we go into Easter Sunday, thinking about, you know, all the cultures all around the world, whether you celebrate it or not, whether you believe in God or not, this is an opportunity for us to remember where we are, who we are, and that we are the same thing and that we got to get through this together.
It's too easy to look at distinctions between people, and yet we're it, as John noted, is you can look around, and if we're going to move forward, we've got to find that most of us can stop making distinctions and simply move forward. And there are differences between us. There are differences in how we think and what we think about how we think, yet at the same time, we're all human beings, and that is an important way to go. And it was just inspiring.
I think there's so much discussion between Mission Control in Houston and the capsule that is different than Apollo 8 or any of the other ones. It's just all of it seems to be kinder. They say, like, you know, when you have time, why don't you do this particular thing? And you need to do this now. And we thank you, and we appreciate your perspective and all this kind of stuff, where it used to be so much more robotic. It's like, you know, do this, do that. And but it just seems like the whole dialogue seems kinder. It was notable to me. I didn't just do that in the perspective of anything else, but they seem friendlier, and they seemed even to say, I know you're busy because you got to download all this stuff, so let's talk in a few minutes or something like that. It doesn't sound like Mission Control in 1968 or 69 with Krantz and yelling at the guys.
I'm not familiar with that.
Was
there yelling?
Well, remember that, of course, the Apollo 13, Gene Kranz was the famous flight controller there.
Okay.
Who was the one who was given much credit for how they had a successful failure in Apollo 13. And so, although he never did say failure is not an option, which a lot of people say he said. Anyway, but it was just robotic, you know, it was just do this, do that. We need you to do this. And it wasn't, I sure appreciate you guys doing your chores today.
Yeah, interesting. Also, this idea that you're looking back at, you know, a place where you don't see any borders. Victor Glover said, you know, it's the place that was created to give us a place to live in the cosmos. So in the context of Easter and his faith, and he says you might not believe in the message of Easter because you're not a Christian, even if you don't believe in God, this is surrounded by darkness, and it is here and for us. We better take care of it. And I do think it has captivated America's attention. I was worried that no one would talk about it.
Your guest a week or so ago said, I think it'll be 7 or 8 days into this thing when people are captivated. It wasn't the launch necessarily, but it's now, is just as your guest described.
Patrick Hicks, you can go back and listen to that on our website too. So what's the message for world leaders, for people who are running for office? Because do we want to be inspired? Or is it we all look up, become inspired, and then go back to our fight, to punching each other in the face with words and rhetoric?
Well, that's one possible future. And that possible future is drawing distinctions and creating differences, however small, and trying to increase the volume on those differences so that people will like you better than they like the other person enough to cast a vote. On the other hand, it also, another possible future is that we start looking at each other as another human being and full of hopes and dreams and visions, and seeing, you know, how can we help everybody achieve their hopes and dreams and visions? Mm-hmm. And there are many possible futures. You know, even if we think of our own state, you know, whether you're overlooking the Big Sioux River up at the state park up at Garrison, whether you're in the Black Hills, whether you're looking at the Slim Buttes up in northwest South Dakota, there are so many beautiful places that could inspire us to think about who's seen this before. I'm looking at the same thing that people have seen for hundreds of years, and it's absolutely gorgeous and awe-inspiring, as opposed to trying to pick a fight that I know I can win.
The people of the United States, at least, and hopefully many, many other places, are the people who will determine that future. So if we choose to elect people who think of all of humanity, or who are compassionate, or look for unity, if we as voters favor those people, then we'll have that kind of future. If we choose to elect the people who yell the loudest, who are the meanest, who are going to cut down their opponents, who are going to say, I'm going to do mean things to other people, and we as voters say that's the person that we want, then we'll get that future. But it's not determined so much by the politicians as the people who vote for politicians, because their authority is only given to them by us. And so voters can determine that future of unity or whatever else. It's in our hands, I would call it, and especially in the United States, but in many, many other countries who can determine their own fate.
How hard is it to run for office now and to enter the arena of politics, even in South Dakota?
Well, it's hard. It's you know that to some extent you're going to be attacked, your character's going to be attacked. Some viewpoints that you may have are going to be mischaracterized. You're going to get hateful phone calls and perhaps even worse than hate that might generate into threats. So in one sense, I'm just very happy that there are people that are willing to put up with that. But we don't have to tolerate that. We don't have to encourage and hold up people who have their gotcha moments and try to get somebody.
So when we look at the race for governor right now, four candidates, and SDPB's debate is coming up on Monday the 13th, what do they go into a debate prepared for? What's a win? How do you define a win in a debate here in South Dakota?
I think to a degree, to me, a win would be defined by innovation. If you can come up with ideas that are both inspiring and maybe haven't been thought of before that can help the South Dakota. To me, a loss is that attack on an opponent that is unrelated. Let's say they say, don't vote for this person because they're short. Or now, every voter is different, right? If we're going to have several hundred thousand people vote in June for these candidates, and I don't know how many will vote for this, but they all have different opinions. I've talked to many different people who vote on the most bizarre characteristics. Well, his uncle was county commissioner in Buffalo County, and so therefore he must be pretty smart, so I'll vote for him. Or I'll vote for him because he's west of this meandering river, or he's east of the meandering river. Or there, so how do voters appeal, you know, how do you appeal to so many different types of voters? And I don't know that answer. Again, a win would be characterized in a completely bizarre way of being yourself. You have to, I think you have to be honest to yourself and let the results fall where they may. None of the candidates probably are in that position. They all want to win. They wouldn't say, look, here's who I am. Here's what I believe. I'm compassionate. I'm willing to compromise to get no votes, maybe. But that would be the only way I could do it with a clean heart.
Right. Win, loss. How would you define it?
Well, I'm not sure in a debate anybody really wins, because you have to stand out. Perhaps what John was describing as saying who you are and what you believe and what your values are and maybe describing that a little bit in action may give you a real win, because we know that most people don't pay attention to things, especially politics. And, you know, increasingly people are turned off with politics, and for good reason, because it's combative. It's over issues that may not be about how my family and my life and my children's future and my future and the future of the state is really going to be affected by it. So in one sense, a win could be that you say who you are and that you're asking for their vote. And to some extent, here's the future that I see, and I will work toward this future. It's a possible future. There are many possible futures. As opposed to a loss, I would think, and maybe perhaps it's a hope recognizing my own values, that a loss would be you do nothing but attack your opponents and try to cast them in a negative light.
Michael Card is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at USD. John Hunter is former publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. And that is our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.